something happening here. But what it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop, children. What's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. Battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. The young people speak in their minds are getting so much resistance from behind. Time we stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Monday, October 30th, 2023 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. As always, thanks for coming along for the ride. I am your host, Chris Hinckley. We are all road warriors, those who esteem ourselves to be. While we have road and warrior left in us, maybe more on both of those as we go on. I wish that young people were speaking their minds. Interesting how that has changed. And everyone's getting resistance from behind or coercion and manipulation. So let's dive in, shall we? I would say, we've arrived at that moment. If you're listening to this broadcast, my heart goes out to you because, essentially we've peaked in America. We peaked probably, according to some estimates, around the 1950s. I think there are strong arguments to be made that might be accurate. Textbooks and things really started to change in administrative fashion around the 40s. And obviously, each generation, successive generation that grows up in a dumbed-down world, there are textbooks. It's cliche. We've probably all, if you're listening to this broadcast or on this network, we probably all know the story of the textbooks from the 1940s and 50s that some college graduates probably could not answer questions. In which I suppose some college graduates today could not answer questions. And so our grandparents used to say, oh, you kids these days, you're so smart. You go to school for, so long, you learn so much. I only made it through the eighth grade. And we know that in many cases, those who were humble and said, oh, you kids these days, you're so smart, their eighth grade education was enough to prepare them to run a municipality. And of course, it wasn't all school. That's kind of the point. There was some training, essential training for life in society together to live cohesively. There was more, obviously, but I mean, there's the backstory of the Reese Committee that says that there was a change so drastic in America from the turn of the 20th century as to constitute a revolution, bloodless constitutional revolution. And the only way that could have happened is by preparing education in advance to endorse it. So there were issues, that being one of the greatest. But still, their education, I would say, was far superior, and there were the things that they learned outside of life. I like the Coleman commercial from a few years ago where Coleman was saying that it was the original social network with a depiction of people around a campfire out in the woods somewhere. I thought that was pretty clever. So here we are today. It's Monday, so I don't mean to be dreary, but we might as well get this out of the way. It's hunting season. And so I had occasion to drive around a bit this past weekend in the Montana wilderness. And what I saw grieved me deeply, as it typically does. There's no reprieve, it seems. Gate after gate in what was formerly open, accessible wilderness. Maurice Strong's rewilding initiative seems to be working. The ghost of Maurice Strong is alive and well, apparently. And forty years ago, it was a different kind of place. There were heavy equipment operators, loggers and miners, and it was no big thing for them to cut a road into the mountains, the side of the mountain, for better or worse. Some people argue, you know, that that was not a good thing, and I would say they were responsible about what they did mostly. The mining might be a separate issue because of how it's led and run, but the husbandry of the loggers in particular is a unique thing. They obviously aren't going to put themselves out of business and livelihood. That would be cutting your own throat. And so the forest seemed more alive, less dead, and that includes plants and also animals. And I've talked lately, I mean, you can do a search anywhere and see that there are more bear encounters everywhere, particularly up and down the Rockies corridor. Interestingly, in that, you know, that Y2Y corridor that we've been talking about on this network, well, on this broadcast, I'll just say for 15 years at least. So the Y2Y initiative, let's see if we can still go there. Y2Y.net is a 600, the letter Y, the number 2, and yeah, Y2Y.net. Yellowstone to Yukon Conservation Initiative. What does go on forever mean? Something esoteric. No doubt. A scale that nature demands. The Yellowstone to Yukon Conservative Initiative Y2Y drives conservation solutions at the scale that nature demands. And you can see on the map, there's a picture from the northern Canadian provinces all the way down through Western American states. And I did one show on this back in the day when Washington was considering legislation that would basically rewild the Spokane Coeur d'Alene corridor on the Washington-Idaho panhandle border. And five people went to Olympia and said, nah, we don't think that's a good idea. But I said at the time, they're just going to stick it back in the drawer and wait till we're looking the other way, and they're going to keep after it. And sure enough, all these years later, it's still, they're still pushing in some very crazy sorts of ways. So speaking of this, you can see on the map on Y2Y.net, there's Spokane, Coeur d'Alene, Lewiston, Salmon, Idaho, La Grande, Oregon, Cody, Wyoming, over in Montana, there's Kalispell, Polson, Missoula, Helena, Butte, Bozeman, all down through the Rockies. And then up into Canada, Nelson, Cranbrook, Revelstoke, Banff, Lake Louise, Calgary, et cetera, going north. And it's pretty shocking, I think, to see this happening. It's happening. You can see as I saw, you know, what happens is the roads that were formerly cut into the hillsides that, you know, people like myself used to hike on or hunt on or things like that, they get Kelly humped and gated. And so there is the, what do you call it? The presentation or the illusion, maybe, of denial of access. And then I've talked about it on this broadcast. In a few short years, that area in Montana, particularly, if it is not maintained regularly, it will go back to the way it wants to be. And so a lot of times when the road gets Kelly humped out, sometimes they'll cut the road out of the mountainside the way it was cut in. And so it doesn't look like there was a road there. A little bit, it grows over pretty quick, but that doesn't even always need to happen. You can wander around on those roads that have been gated, can't be driven anymore, and see in just a few short years, within 5 years or so, all of a sudden it's growing over again to the point that it would be impassable by vehicle because of the new tree growth and things. And within about 10 years, completely impassable. So interesting how that's happening right before our very eyes. And I don't know. While we see these things happening at glacial speed, there's more evidence too. There's a story I saw yesterday on CNN that makes me think of this. Abandoned golf courses are being reclaimed by nature. Again, this breaks my heart. But we are being bled. America was great. The greatness, questionable. You know, speaking of, I think we played a little bit. Maybe we didn't. I think I thought about it really loud. George Friedman's Brain Bar Budapest talk, where he talks about, you know, global war is sitting with you now. I introduced you to the iPhone, and he goes through piece by piece all the pieces of the iPhone, any phone really, and how it all, that all comes out of war or military technology. So there was a brain drain, particularly over the 20th century. You know, you think of things like Operation Paperclip, which is a correlation of the brain drain and what George Friedman talked about, and you know, the importation of what, at least 2,500 Nazi scientists, development of certain specific technology, and a lot of us enjoy those things today, not realizing the history of those things, not really, you know, conveniently unaware. But now there's a brain drain sort of in the other direction, and we certainly are seeing the siphoning off of our financial resources over the last few decades. You know, we've seen WTO and things like that. We've seen the dismantling and offshoring of the automotive industry. It's incredibly ironic. I've mentioned it before, but I think it's incredibly ironic that people are running around screaming, China's coming to get us, while they can't shop at Walmart enough. And everything they buy is made in or shipped from China. Well, you know, maybe stop giving them a bunch of money. I don't know. Call me crazy. That is schizophrenic. That is mental illness when you say, they're coming to get me, let me buy their stuff. That is an indication of mental illness. Maybe mild. Still, you're confused. So our industrial capacity has been offshored. Now, I think one of the things that people don't consider, maybe when you hear about another few billion or trillion or whatever that we're going to send offshore, you know, whether it was 2 point something trillion for Afghanistan or, you know, however many hundreds of billions for, you know, Ukraine or Israel or whatever, maybe we should start thinking old school generational bad guys who have, you know, they operate on a long game sort of mindset. 20 years is short. Generation is short. 50 years, 100 years, that kind of thing. And they say they want to bring America down to parity with the rest of the world so there are no superpowers. And they've been writing about it in the report that the government report that comes out every once in a while. For the last 30 years, they've been writing about it in the Global Trends reports, National Security Council, or is it the National Intelligence Council, I think. Let me check just to make sure. I think it's the National Intelligence Council. Yeah. The NIC. Mm-hmm. So they've been writing about bringing America down. Well, not that per se, but that America would come down to parity with, you know, India, China, Russia, that kind of thing. So then maybe we should view this let's just call it money for this liquidity, this currency. It's not really money. Like Jefferson said, it's the ghost of money and not money itself. Maybe we should think of this differently. It's not support to go help something or some, you know, and should we be printing more to help ourselves here? No, absolutely not. What's happening is, first of all, inflation debauches the currency and the economy and the people. So the more currency that you manufacture, that you hypothecate out of thin air, the less every monetary unit is worth, or the less purchasing power it has, the more proper way to say it. It has no value. Even the Federal Reserve admits the Federal Reserve note has zero value. Why? Because it can only be exchanged for like. There is no value there. There is purchasing power. It's all an illusion. And, you know, most people, speaking of mental illness, you know, again, the St. Louis Fed, let me look right on their own website. Federal Reserve says, let's see, the entry, making sense of the Federal Reserve, who owns the Federal Reserve banks? Who owns them? It's funny how this question is never answered. Who owns the Federal Reserve banks is never answered. But the page, the Federal Reserve's own page on its own website says, this is .org, not .gov. So that'll tell you a lot right there. Federal Reserve banks are not a part of the federal government. Not as italicized. Not a part of the federal government. But they exist because of an act of Congress. Their purpose is to serve the public. So is the Fed public or private? The answer is both. That's interesting. Sounds like fascism to me. So Congress granted the Federal Reserve an exclusive license to counterfeit the dollar. Most people wouldn't believe you even if you showed them that. That is evidence of our collective mental illness in America. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
I am so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low-quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork. Raised the way nature intended.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
When you were here before, you couldn't look you in the eye. You're just like an angel. Your skin makes me cry. You flow like a feather in a beautiful world. I wish I was special. You're so very special, but I'm a creep. I'm a weirdo. What the hell am I doing here?
Welcome back. I'm going to get to some examples of some depressing stuff right from CNN. Imagine that. But before we do that, global trends. I mentioned that global trends 2040 is out, and a more contested world. That's funny. It sounds just like Huntington's Clash of Civilizations, if I didn't know better, which was an idea that he built on from others. Anyway. They don't predict the future. Heavens, no, they don't predict the future. But, you know, there might be a nudge involved. There might be a little hop involved. It happened on purpose, as in, let it happen, help it happen, make it happen on purpose kind of thing. Nudge if you have to. Anyway, this from the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, Global Trends 2040, A More Contested World, the explainer video. Can we do that, please?
This seventh edition of Global Trends is called Global Trends 2040, A More Contested World. And we chose that, and we're emphasizing that particular theme because we see increasing division, fragmentation, and greater contestation at really every level, from societies, states, and the international system. You know, we're seeing increasing debate about what are the foundations of society. You know, we're seeing political fragmentation in states in every region and of every type. And then in the international arena, we're seeing a growing rivalry between the U.S. and China. As you know, the intelligence community provides analysis for the range of U.S. policymakers on a daily basis. We often unpack events in individual countries as well as individual trends and dynamics in the world. Those dynamics that kind of have a long trajectory. And if you're looking at trends, you both have to look back to see where it has come from, but you also need to look forward to see where it's going. And there's a lot of data out there that helps us forecast, particularly on those very foundational trends. So we look for the best data, the most up-to-date data, the new modeling that's out there. We talk to a wide range of scholars in the United States and around the world. I think there's one thing we have to remember, and I think all intelligence community analysts would say the same thing. We don't predict the future. We're not in a crystal ball business. You know, we're in the business of understanding the data, exploring what are the patterns and the trend lines and where is it going. What are some events that might disrupt that? So much of Global Trends is really looking at those patterns, looking at those trajectories, looking at those trend lines to see, again, where do we think it's going? Then we're attempting to weave them together. What's really fascinating about Global Trends is not only to kind of look at individual trends, so looking at demographics, economics, the environment, breakthroughs in technology, but it's when you layer those and put one on top of the other and say, where are those going when we put them together? If this book sparks that conversation and isn't just read and dismissed, then that's good. It's even successful if people fundamentally disagree with it and challenge it. That might be the best of all possible worlds, that someone reads it and says, that's not our world. That's not where we're headed, and this is why. That's success. It promoted a conversation. It promoted a reaction. You know, if you think we're wrong, tell us. That's okay. But we're having that conversation about the future. We're having a conversation about what are the decisions and what are the dynamics that will potentially take us there.
So I can hear Dr. Strangelove in there for sure. We're having that conversation. It's called scenario planning, a.k.a. wargaming. And we don't predict the future. Heavens no. We should all remember, you know, that we don't have a crystal ball. We're not in the business of predicting the future. We're in the business of understanding the data, exploring what the patterns are. So can you torture the data a little bit to sing whatever tune you want so that you can nudge in a particular direction and then say, you know, in a plausibly deniable sort of way, just say, well, you know, the data said this is what was going to happen. And the best thing that you could do is object, because then we have that conversation. And based on your feedback, we can, you know, lean a little here, press a little there, and presto, any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic. I think Norbert Wiener and L. Stafford Beer would be super impressed. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
The truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion.
Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com, or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Welcome back. I think a lot of the language in Revelation and even Daniel, the stuff that corresponds, is spiritual in nature. Maybe those kings and the horn, maybe that has a spiritual connotation more than a physical connotation, leading the physical. British intrigue, you know, we're hearing a lot about Israel these days, obviously. British intrigue created Israel and Saudi Arabia virtually out of whole cloth, simultaneously. And today, American Christians don't know their history at all. The BSC, the British Security Coordination, created the OSS and the CIA. And while Bill Donovan was London's man in Washington, it's common knowledge. Ralph McGahee said, or he wrote, I should say, in his book Deadly Deceits, published back in 1983, Deadly Deceits, My 25 Years in the CIA. He wrote all those years ago, and the story goes, you know, he spent 25 years in the CIA so that he could write the book, essentially, and say, you know, be an unimpeachable witness, a career intelligence medal recipient. He could bring his story to light without impeachment. And he wrote, the CIA is not now, nor has it ever been, a central intelligence agency. There are people who say, I think, you know, Stockley is one of the people who say, well, there are the, you know, the two, nah, the one just serves, you know, the intelligence serves to really hide the wolf among the sheep. Anyway, and if you listen to John Kiriakou, I think it is, he's the one who says in recent years it's just becoming, you know, it's all wet work. So that's interesting. The CIA is not now, nor has it ever been, a central intelligence agency. McGahee wrote in Deadly Deceits, it is the covert action arm of the president's foreign policy advisors. In that capacity, it overthrows or supports foreign governments while reporting intelligence, quote unquote, justifying those activities. It shapes its intelligence, even in such critical areas as Soviet nuclear weapon capability, perhaps Iranian nuclear weapon capability these days, perhaps, you know, isn't it interesting that all of a sudden we're all excited about Iran and Hezbollah is everywhere and Hamas is everywhere, never mind the backstories. So it shapes its intelligence even in such critical areas as Soviet nuclear weapon capability to support presidential policy. But that's sort of misdirection. That's sort of, that creates, I think, a limited hangout in our mind. Get back to that in a second. Disinformation is a large part of its covert action responsibility, and the American people are the primary target audience of its lies. I thought that was, you know, that violated its charter. Yeah, well, to McGahee's point, you know, back in 2012, we had the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act, and now, you know, the CIA can't be responsible for stuff that goes out on international platforms and social media, for example, and might come back and might make the American people believe a thing or whatever that's not true. I mean, how can they be responsible for that? My goodness. So it's effectively been legalized. Anyway, the president's foreign policy advisors, that's where that stuff comes from. Covert action arm of the president's foreign policy advisors. So to say that presidential policy is a thing, it's not a thing. That's just a figurehead. The president is a frontispiece. The more dumbed down, charming, and charismatic that he is, the more Reagan-esque that he is, the better. Because, you know, that way we can maintain plausible deniability. He had no idea, and he can honestly say, I didn't know about that, and that's been happening ever since these spooky, shadowy types have been around. You know, Fletcher Prouty wrote pretty extensively about that, talked pretty extensively about that, for example. And so here's a question. You know, we know the president has foreign policy advisors. Do you think Putin has foreign policy advisors? We know the king has foreign policy advisors. Prime ministers have foreign policy advisors. I wonder if those foreign policy advisors chat. I wonder who their advisors are. I wonder if they might be, I don't know, like the ascended masters types. Talk about a hierarchy. Wow. That would be my speculation. It's interesting. People have noted over the years that everybody seems to like Henry Kissinger, for example, and guys like Brzezinski. Funny how, you know, even when we're at odds with China and or Russia, you know, David Rockefeller, according to the New York Times, has an airstrip in both of those countries, whether we're on the ins or the outs, and everybody seems to be able to make time to have a sit down with Henry Kissinger. It's amazing. Whether we're at odds or not, amazing. So I wonder if anybody else has a foreign policy advisor, and you start thinking about, speaking of intelligence, well, maybe it is just an intelligence gathering apparatus. Sure, but, you know, also maybe total information awareness is a precursor to full spectrum dominance. Because maybe you can feed this into your cybernetic apparatus, like we heard in the Global Trends 2040 explainer video we just played in the last segment, a more contested world. Global Trends 2040, a more contested world, where NIC Director of Strategic Futures Group Maria Langen-Rykoff tells us, you know, we don't predict the future. We just, you know, we don't have a crystal ball. We just, you know, try to understand the patterns. We just explore the data. What are the patterns and the trending lines? Right, but then can you nudge as a result of that and create plausible deniability in so doing? And I think you can. So, does everyone have foreign policy advisors? Seems so. And that's interesting, isn't it? I think it's interesting. But do the foreign policy advisors chat? Or should I say, you know, do they have advisors? Seems so. So that's all interesting. Anyway, you know, the last thing I'll say about the financial stuff that I was talking about earlier, if you view it a certain way, it's horrifying. And the way I view it is, A, the creation of more currency units, i.e. inflation, causes an erosion, or a, you know, what most would call a devaluation, an erosion of purchasing power. In other words, you are debauching the currency. And eventually, as, you know, people like Jim Rickards have discussed, you run into a thing called the Triffin dilemma, where, you know, maybe we should play Robert Triffin explaining it in his own words. Better he explain it than I explain it, maybe. Let me do that. I think I have a good explainer clip. Let me see if we can do that real quick. Better he explain it than I explain it. What is the Triffin dilemma? Hyperinflation in simple terms. And the world says, look, man, your funny money ain't worth nothing. Give us something, you know, that's real. Maybe one or two. I think we should start with Triffin himself. And, you know, then, from there, you basically, this is the Bretton Woods scheme. Deficit spending. We're going to spend our way to prosperity. When have you ever done that? When have you known anyone to do that? The concept is insane. What it does is it basically siphons off the lifeblood of the people from whom that currency is coming, siphons off their lifeblood, and sends it to other places, in this case, around the world, across the world, out of Americans primarily. You know, Wall Street has been a laundering, a laundromat, essentially, for all kinds of bad things. And then we have all these other things that get set up that you hear about in things like the Panama Papers. And so we're creating inflation that devalues our own currency, that basically impoverishes the American people. It siphons off our economic lifeblood, I think, in a very real sense. And at the same time, all of that stuff goes out, and those Federal Reserve notes that are counterfeited dollars, they have purchasing power, especially when they're hot off the presses. They are the first money game. That's the first money game, where when it comes off the presses, it has greater purchasing power than when the market finds equilibrium and says, wait a minute, you printed a bunch of those, so each one is now worth less, and the cost of goods and services goes up commensurately, which we have seen over the last few years with COVID. By the way, I think the most amazing thing about COVID is that it cured the common cold and flu. That is amazing. Truly the most remarkable aspect of COVID. It cured the common cold and flu. You've not heard anyone talk about the common cold or flu in the last 3.5 years. It's remarkable. Isn't that astounding? Anyway, speaking of the financial stuff, here's a little explainer. Robert Triffin himself explains the Triffin dilemma. Can we play that, please?
If you want a growth of trade and production to avoid unemployment and so on, you need also a growth of money. To trade more, you need more money. And you need, for internationally, to trade more internationally, you need more international money. And if you didn't have the growth of, if growth of reserves were no longer fed by the United States deficit, you would have a world deflation. That was one horn of the dilemma. The other horn was that if you continued to feed world reserves growth, a proper amount of world reserve growth, through American deficits, the United States dollar would run into trouble and would no longer, the United States would no longer be able to convert mounting piles of foreign dollars into declining piles of gold in Fort Knox.
So that's Robert Triffin on the Triffin dilemma. The more that you do this, though, you run into a problem. And eventually, like I said, the world says in simple terms, hey, man, you printed so much funny money at this point. It has zero, very, very little purchasing power, if any. And that is hyperinflation in simple terms. And so what do you do? But we were sold bill of goods, and this was Bretton Woods almost 100 years ago, and the Marshall Plan, which gave it teeth, as they say. To round out the financial stuff quickly, here's a from Discipline Funds, what is the Triffin dilemma? Another YouTube explainer. Can we do that, please?
After World War II, it was clear the world needed a new financial system. The gold standard was considered too rigid, but at the same time, economists were worried that countries would devalue their currency to boost exports. For this reason, 44 countries sent delegates to a conference held in Bretton Woods, New Hampshire, as of the 1st of July, 1944. The U.S., which held two-thirds of the world's gold reserves after the war, was obviously the most influential player, and ultimately, all currencies ended up linked to the dollar, and the dollar was linked to gold. One important concern arose, though. If a country goes through an economic crisis, how can it get out of it without devaluing its currency? To address this issue, two institutions were created. One, the International Monetary Fund, which was supposed to lend money to countries that are in trouble and cannot attract financing from other sources. Two, the International Bank for Reconstruction and Development, which is now called the World Bank and was supposed to help less developed countries grow. Unfortunately, as good as it may have sounded on paper, the Bretton Woods system didn't survive because the United States kept running deficits to fund various projects, and therefore, the amount of dollars in existence kept increasing while the gold reserves of the U.S. kept shrinking, as more countries demanded gold in exchange for their dollars. As such, on the 15th of August, 1971, Nixon officially announced that dollars would no longer be convertible to gold, thereby putting the final nail in the coffin of the Bretton Woods system.
So there's that. That's fun. I think that's a pretty good explainer. Maybe one more. If we can do the last explainer, the Bretton Woods monetary system, 1944 to 71, explained in 1 minute. From the 1 Minute Economics channel. That's a pretty good one, though. But can we do this last one, please? Was that it? I think that was it, actually. There was the one before that, the Triffin Dilemma. It's from Discipline Funds. There were two, so that's the Bretton Woods monetary system explained in 1 minute, right? Yeah? Which one was the last one that we played? Oh, okay. So the one before that is what is the Triffin Dilemma? That was the one I thought we were playing from Discipline Funds YouTube channel. Yes, please. All right.
What is the Triffin Dilemma, and why does it matter more than ever? All right, what's happening, everybody? We've got a super sexy topic today. We're going to be talking about the Triffin Dilemma and the paradox of global monetary policy for the reserve currency issuer. It's about to get real hot in here, so sit tight. So this sexy guy's name was Robert Triffin, and Triffin was a Belgian economist who discovered in the 1960s that the reserve currency issuer in the global monetary system has an inherent paradox. The basic gist of the paradox is that the global reserve currency issuer issues the safest and most widely used global currency, and so domestic monetary policy can have all sorts of unintended consequences, not only for the domestic economy, but for the global economy as a whole. This is a great chart from the IMF, which puts into perspective the size of all of the relative reserve currency issuers in the world. And the United States, as you can see, is an unusually huge one. Triffin found this to be particularly true in the 1960s, but it's become even more exaggerated in the last 50 years as globalization has taken off and technology has made the world an increasingly small place. To put this in perspective, consider that there's $12 trillion of dollar-denominated foreign debt, as well as almost $25 trillion of foreign holdings of U.S. assets. So we've got this big paradox here where the United States has an inflation problem, but the rest of the world needs dollars. But at the same time, the United States is trying to make sure that there are fewer dollars out there. So we're raising rates, fiscal policy is getting really tight. And so this is causing a knock-on effect for all of these foreign governments, which are not only inheriting the monetary policy, but are having a harder time of obtaining dollars along the way. The reason this is so important today is because the Fed's raising rates super fast to try to snuff out inflation. But at the same time, we're seeing dollar demand surge. And when dollar demand surges, it tends to portend that something not so great is going on in the global economy.
So how is this all going to unfold? Well, nobody really knows. But if you've got one of these, you can at least begin to understand how monetary policy is such a blunt instrument and has this
sort of unknown knock-on effect, not only in the domestic economy, but around the global economy because of the Triffin dilemma. Thanks for watching, everybody. If you like
these. All right, so little explainer. I don't know. It's complicated stuff, but not really. I think that these things are actually relatively simple. They are made to seem complicated. We are led to believe this is super complicated. Only the most advanced economists can understand this stuff. But really, again, like John Kenneth Galbraith said, the process by which money is created is so simple, the mind is literally repelled. We play that Investopedia explainer from time to time, as we did last week. And it's really pretty simple. And so, you know, even from Wikipedia, Bretton Woods system, Wikipedia entry on 15 August 1971, 100 years after the Pike letter, interesting. United States terminated convertibility of the U.S. dollar to gold. France, among others, especially France, was showing up being like, hey, man, are you telling me we can give you this worthless paper for gold? Shoot, we got lots of paper. Give us all your gold. So finally, you know, the window was closed. And as Wikipedia says, the Wikipedia entry effectively bringing the Bretton Woods system to an end and rendering the dollar a fiat currency. What does that mean? As I say, it has purchasing power because I say. So it no longer was exchangeable for actual money or value. And therefore, it has no value itself. It has purchasing power. And so what has been happening, you know, these things don't happen overnight, and so people don't notice. We've forgotten. How many generations has this been since 1971 now? More than 50 years, half a century, but it was always intended to go this way. First, you get everyone excited about, look at what we can do with all of this funny money. Look at all the growth that it creates and all of the jobs and all of the this and prosperity and that. And sure, never mind the fact that the IBRD / World Bank and that whole group have been stealing the assets or the natural resources and wealth of nations ever since. They're really good at it, and everyone just keeps defaulting. Oh shoot, I wonder who's out of that coming. Like a loan shark, or like a, you know, a payday loan service, or the local pawn shop, or whatever, you know. How much interest are we paying? 287%? What the heck is going on here? It's a scheme. It was always meant to be a scheme. It was no accident. Most of us don't understand it. So when we look at it, our eyes gloss over. Those who do understand it have told us over the years. And again, I think evidence of mental illness is that we've had the truth staring us square in the face for a long, long time, and we didn't really take heed. Sorry, that's depressing, but it's reality. Second hour coming up, and I will explain the rewilding stuff and some other stuff when we come back. Stick around, more right after this break.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. because you can handle the truth.